Good to welcome everybody. Unlike any other Shabbos or a normal Yontif, the Shulchan Aruch has accepted the opinion that on Pesach night we cannot recite Kiddush until it's already nighttime, until Tzeisach Kochavim. This is a dispute in the commentaries on the Mishnah. The Mishnah says in the beginning of the last Perek Emsochim that one should not begin to eat Ad Shetechshach. So the Tosfos understands that literally, Ad Shetechshach means till it's Tzeisach Kochavim. Why can't you say Kiddush like in the summertime? You always have an early minyan on Friday afternoon. Everybody says Kiddush and starts eating right away. So Tosfos says, based on the Pasuk and Chumash, that the Torah says you have to eat the matzev, you have to eat the Korban Pesach, Achlas Habasa Balayla Hazeh. And the Pasuk says regarding matzev, also Be'erev Tochla Matzev, at night. So even if you'll be Mekabel Yontif early, you'll accept Yontif early, and there'll be a prohibition to do Melacha, but you won't be able to recite the Kiddush. Thank you. Because the Kiddush is the beginning of the Sipa Yitzias Mitzrayim, and all of the mitzvahs have to be fulfilled davke balayla. Just like you can't have the Seder in the morning, you have Pesach, it lasts for 7 days, but you can't have the Seder whenever you please. The Seder has to be davke at night, so if you're mekabel yontif early, so it's also not the right zman. This is the accepted opinion in the Shulchan Aruch. Not all of the commentaries on the Mishnayos agree to this. Other Rishonim say it's not true. They say you can eat Mekabel Yontif early, you can eat Korban Pesach early and finish the whole Seder, Mibod Yom. But the accepted opinion of Shulchan Aruch is that you shouldn't begin until after Tzeisach Kochavim. I remember there was a rabbi who was a chaplain in an old age home, and he told me he has a problem that the older people, you can't begin to wait till Tzeisach Kochavim, you're going to fall asleep in the middle. It's impossible. You have to start early. So I gave him a suggestion, and he told me after Yontif, that'll work. The din is that the Echad Miyodea and the Chad Gadya and all of the piyutim at the end are not part of the Seder. That's only a minute. So I said, maybe you can start with the Chad Gadya early, when they're going to daven early. So he started with Echad Miyodea and Chad Gadya and everything else, and that took 15 minutes. And by the time he finished all of that, the people were all awake and they started saying Kiddush. It was after Tzeisach Kochavim. That solved this problem. So if that can solve the problem, it's avada good. If a person really has a real big shas hadchak, you have an older person, someone who's not well, so then you have to consult your rabbi, you have to consider the possibility of having the Seder a little earlier. On Pesach night, the Chachamim instituted a special takonim in the Rabbanon, that we should have arba kosos, 4 cups of wine. What exactly is the definition of wine? So that was a big dispute in America regarding grape juice. The Gemara says that let's say someone is away out of town on business and he's stuck and he can't come back to civilization and he doesn't have any wine to say Kiddush. You can buy a box of matzahs in the store, let's say, but he can't buy any wine. So the Gemara says you buy a cluster of grapes and you squeeze it out, and when you squeeze out the grapes, you have grape juice, you can say Kiddush over that. So grape juice is considered wine for the purpose of reciting Kiddush. That's not a problem. The problem is that the grape juice that they sell in America is cooked and it's treated chemically in such a way that it's never going to ferment. It'll never be able to turn into wine. So that was a big dispute here in America years ago when they first started with the grape juice. So Rav Henkin, who used to be the big poisek in New York before Rav Moshe Feinstein appeared on the scene, Rav Henkin published an essay years ago that grape juice is shahakal niya bedvaroi and it's not good for Kiddush and Avdallah. It doesn't count for anything. The only time the Gemara says that grape juice is bar piagof and you can recite Kiddush on it, if it's normal grape juice, that if you would let it sit, it would ferment and turn into wine. So even though you drink it, and it's not going to, after you drink it, it's not going to be able to turn into wine, but still that has the status of wine. So the first one who paskened in America that grape juice is bar piagof and is acceptable for Kiddush and Abdullah was Professor Louis Ginsberg from the Jewish Theological Seminary. It was during the Prohibition years when it was against the law to make alcoholic beverages unless it was necessary for sacramental purposes. So the Jews were making wine. So Louis Ginsberg notified the American government that it's not accurate, that they can just as well, they can use grape juice. So many Rabbanim at that time were very opposed to his tshuva. He published a tshuva in Hebrew. Many Rabbanim were opposed to his tshuva. And they said that it's like a guf balina shama, like a dead body. Grape juice is cooked and chemically treated in such a way that it's never going to ferment and turn into wine. So that's like a dead body, that it's not bar piagof. So there's a big machlokes. The first Orthodox rabbi who supported Louis Ginsberg, whose opinion carried weight, was Rav Moshe Feinstein. But even after Moshe wrote his tshuva, even after he passed like that, there's still a strong minority who are opposed to this idea. So if one can avoid using grape juice, certainly better all year long. It's a question. Moshe Feinstein said that grape juice is dina ki yayin for Kiddush and Abdullah, but he said on Pesach night, he thought that it's not acceptable, because the whole idea of arbekosis is to drink a toast, to drink a l'chaim. So you don't drink a l'chaim over tomato juice, you don't drink a l'chaim over orange juice, you drink a l'chaim over something that has a spunk to it. It has to have some alcoholic content. It doesn't have to have 25% alcohol. It has to have some kind of alcohol in it. So Moshe Feinstein insisted that even though all year long grape juice is acceptable, he thought that for the arbekosis it's not right. Rav Soloveitchik, towards the end of his life, was not healthy enough to drink wine, so he used to use grape juice for the arbekosis. He used to be machmen not to use grape juice for the kiddush, because the Rambam's opinion following the Gaonim is based on a passage in the Gemara that you cannot use wine that's cooked for the purpose of reciting kiddush. Wine that's yayin mevushal may not be used on the mizbeach to fulfill the mitzvah of nisoch hayayin. So the Gemara makes such a statement that yayin that's pasul and nasach hagabi hamizbeach may not be used for kiddush. So Tosfos says, nah, it doesn't mean that. It means that wine that's spoiled, if it started to develop, if it started to spoil, and normal people wouldn't want to drink it, so you're not, just like you're not allowed to use it for yayin on the mizbeach, so you shouldn't use it for kiddush either. But the Rambam follows the Gaonim, that wine that's mevushal is not acceptable for kiddush. For arbekosis it would be good, and for kiddush it's no good. Only for kiddush, for havdalah it would be good. Only for kiddush it's no good. So Rav Soloveitchik's practice was that he would insist on using wine yayin she'ena mevushal for kiddush all the time, and for havdalah, for arbekosis, he would use, for the second, third, and fourth course, he would use grape juice. Rav Moshe Feinstein, on the other hand, writes in his sefer that all of the wine that they sell in America is all yayin mevushal. There's no such thing as yayin she'ena mevushal, because if the wine is pasteurized, so that's already mevushal. They heat it till a degree temperature that's considered yad soled. So all the wine is mevushal. He disagreed with the Tzelem Rav, who gives the hechsher on the kedem wine. So the father of the stepfather of the Tzelem Rav, who gives the hechsher now, the one who originally gave the hechsher on the kedem wine, was of the opinion that wine is only considered mevushal if you heated it till 212 degrees and it started to evaporate. So Moshe Feinstein said that that's not correct. He said the Rishonim only had a sofek, the Or Zoruah, as quoted in the Shulchan Aruch, as being not sure. What if you heated wine till it was lukewarm? Maybe poshrim is enough to be considered yayin mevushal. So the Or Zoruah says he doesn't think so. He thinks you have to cook it till it's yatzoledes. Yatzoledes is not 212. Yatzoledes is much below 212. Much less than 212. It's a question exactly what's considered yatzoledes, 160, 170, 180, but it's not 180. It's something much less than 180. 180 is Yad Nichvis. That's much higher than yatzoledes. So Moshe Feinstein was of the opinion that all the wine that Kerem sells, all the wine that's pasteurized, is all yayin mevushal. You can get some fancy Israeli wines or European wines, kosher wines that are non-mevushal, taka, not pasteurized. But the American wines are all mevushal. So that's a question all year long regarding the wine for kiddush. Rav Soloveitchik thought that if grape juice is considered wine and a person enjoys grape juice better than he enjoys wine, so he said the Rambam uses the expression based on the passage in the Gemara Psochim that it should be a pleasant tasting wine. Shtia areva should be a pleasant tasting wine. So he said, if people enjoy grape juice better than wine, so Adarama said, to heed the mitzvah to use grape juice for the arbekosis. And Rav Moshe Feinstein thought that it's not correct. One of the proofs that Rav Moshe Feinstein brought was from a passage in the Talmud Yerushalmi that's mentioned in the Shulchan Aruch, that they quote that there was some Rabbonim who would drink arbekosis on Pesach night, and they would have a headache until, one would have a headache till Shavuos, one would have a headache till Sukkos. He would be so sick from drinking the wine. So Rav Moshe Feinstein asked the question, he probably only got sick because it was wine. If he would have had grape juice, he wouldn't get sick. So why didn't he use some grape juice? Is it right that he can't use grape juice? So Mr. Herzog, the balabas from Kedem Wine, said, with all due respect to Rav Moshe Feinstein, he thinks that it's not a proof, because in the days of the Gemara, they had no such thing as grape juice Pesach time. The grapes grow around Tishrei, and you can't leave the grapes like that, so you have to squeeze out the grapes and make grape juice. So today we know how to treat the grape juice in such a way that it won't ferment. But in the days of the Talmud, if they would squeeze out the grapes and make grape juice, by the time it would come Pesach, it would be wine. Grape juice didn't exist Pesach time. So that's what the Baal Avos from Kerem said, that with all due respect to Amoshe, he didn't think that it was a good proof. Mr. Herzog has another Chiddush. Very interesting. The Rabbanim are not sure. Maybe he's right. The Rambam quotes from the Gaonim that wine that's mevushal may not be used for nisoch mechosim and eskem. It cannot be used for nisoch hayayin and mizbeach. So the Rambam follows the Gaonim that that's not kosher for a kiddush eater. Special thing in kiddush. You can only recite kiddush on such wine that's royal and asach hagabi hamizbeach. So what if we have wine which is not mevushal? We all use yayin mevushal, so we're not choshish for the Rambam. But if one is machmer, never to use yayin mevushal for kiddush, so there's a further machloikas, the Rambam, a dispute, the Rambam and the other Rishonim, the Rambam and the other Gonim. What if you have wine that has sugar added? A lot of the wine is heavy, Malaga wine is very heavy wine, they have a lot of sugar added. So the Rambam is of the opinion, if you have a korban in the Beis HaMikdosh, you're not allowed to add any sugar. It says in the Chumash, Sora Dvash may not be added to any korbanos, not to a mincha, not to yayin or anything. So if you add Sora Dvash, so you're not allowed to be makrevit on the Mizbeach. So this is a dispute between the Rambam and the Gaonim. If you add sugar into the wine, does the whole korban become puzzle? So the whole yayin is not royal lenasach, no. The yayin is kosher lenasach, but you'll be violating an avera. So advash less aktiruf, so mainly can't be makrivit on the mizbech.
Sugar is dvash, the same thing?
Rashi writes on Chumash that dvash refers to pri, b'chol mesikas pri. Sweet flavoring that comes from any fruit. So this is, most people use yayin mevushal for kiddush. So if cooked wine is acceptable, so wine that has sugar added is no shayla. For sure it's good. But if one wants to be machma not to use yayin mevushal for kiddush, So there's a question, would one be allowed to use wine that has sugar added? So Mr. Herzog has a chiddush, he doesn't use any other sugar, he only uses sugar that's made from wine. He takes wine and gets sugar out of the wine, then he adds that to other wine in order to make that wine sweeter. So he has an original chiddush, that's not a psul. He can't say the wine has sugar, natural sugar in it, so that's not possible. If I mix one wine with another wine, that's going to be puzzle, because one wine is sweeter than the other. So if I take the sugar out of one wine, I mix in it to the other wine, that shouldn't be puzzle. It could be that he's right. So that's what he said, that's his policy. When he has all of the heavy-duty, the heavy wines, the heavy in there, and they're very sweet, because he adds sugar from other wines.
Since the days of Ramesha, things have changed, that they have wines that aren't labeled Mevushal on it, from Kedron.
Right, they have two kinds. They have Mevushal and non-Mevushal. So Moshe Feinstein said that it's not correct. Even the non-Mevushal are also Mevushal. He disagreed with the Rov who gives the Hechsher on the Kedem. He says that any wine that's pasteurized is by definition Mevushal. So we pass in the Shulchan Aruch that Yayin Mevushal is good.
In America these are imported wines, French wines.
Ah, yeah, you have imported wines that are not Mevushal. Right. But Kedem, they're all the pasteurized wines, so Moshe felt that they're all called Mevushal. There are expensive Israeli wines and European wines which are not Mevushal. That is correct.
Is there a minimum percentage alcohol content that's called needed mishaker?
Rabbi David Feinstein printed something. If a person feels that he can't drink wine that's that has too much alcohol content, so he can mix in a little bit of grape juice. So he gives you some kind of measurement. I already forgot what it is. A small percentage. I don't know, 2 or 3% alcohol or something. He gives you some percentage.
I think Dr. Lutsky is asking that today the Kedem has something called Concord Cow, which is only 3% or something.
Yeah.
Is it better or worse to use that than any other wine that's 7% or 12%, or wine is wine that makes a different what percentage alcohol?
No, if it has 3%, I think Rabbi David Feinstein said that's acceptable. Yeah, I think so. Even according to his father's opinion, that you can't use grape juice for abacuses, you have to use something that's shaykh to say l'chaim over. So he says if it has 3%, I think he says that it is acceptable. How much wine do you have to drink from each one of the abacuses? So a lot of people have the practice to just take a little sip. So it says in Shulchan Aruch that's not proper. The accepted opinion is that l'chatchila you have to drink kol hakos, if possible. The cup of wine has to contain a minimum of a revius. A revius is the volume of an egg and a half. The eggs that we see usually are large size eggs. medium-sized eggs. They make mayonnaise out of them. They use in the food industry. They never sell it in the stores usually. So the eggs that we see are either jumbo eggs or large-sized eggs. The din is that a revius, the cup of wine has to contain a minimum of a revius. A revius means the volume of an egg and a half of a normal size, an average-sized egg. This is much more than a revius. Okay. If you use a tiny becher that doesn't have a revius, so that doesn't count at all. Just like the Kiddush and Abdullah, you have about a minimum of a revius. Same thing for abacosis. So it says in Shulchan Aruch, the chatchila proper practice is to drink the entire cup each one of the times. If it's too difficult, then the din requires a person should drink rov hakos, the majority of the kos each time. There was an opinion in Tosfos that the arbekosis, the mitzvah of arbekosis midrabbana, doesn't really require that each and every person should drink his own cup of wine. It's like Kiddush. One person says Kiddush, one person says Abdullah, he drinks the wine, and everybody else is yaitzeh. And then the din doesn't really require that when you say Kiddush, there is no requirement that you have to drink kol hakos or rov hakos. The din only requires that you should drink maloy lugmal, which is a rov revius by Nodim Beinani. So Tosfos is of the opinion that you can have a Seder, and one person will be drinking all the abacosis, and everybody else will be yotzei. Because the abacosis really consists of four brachas halakos. You say Kiddush over a cup of wine, then you say bracha asher gyalanu over a cup of wine, then you recite Birchas Hamazon over the third cup of wine, then you say the bracha at the conclusion of the halal, which is known as the Birchas Hashir over the fourth cup of wine. So Tosfos is of the opinion that that's all it is. It's four brachas halakos. And one person can recite all the brachas and drink all the wine, and everybody will be yotzei, and there isn't even a requirement l'chatchila to drink kol hakos. But that's not the accepted opinion of Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch, the accepted view is the Rambam's opinion that there are two aspects to arbekosis. What Tosfos said is one aspect, and the other aspect is you should drink l'chaim four times, and l'chatchila the proper practice is to drink kol hakos. And b'dieved we would rely on Ruba Kukuloi. Because you start the Seder late, and all the children have something to say, and all the grandchildren have all the gematrios and all the Rashi Tevis to say, so it takes forever. So some people don't get to eat the matzah until after midnight. Some people don't get to eat the avikayim until after midnight. So there's a big discussion in the Gemara and the commentaries on the Gemara. The Mishnah says that in the days of the Beis HaMikdash, they had to finish eating the Korban Pesach by midnight, by Chatzos. And the Gemara points out that there was a dispute in the days of the Tanaim, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Loza ben Azariah, whether the requirement of chatzos is min haTorah midirabbanan. When somebody brings a korban chatas, a korban osham to the Beis HaMikdash, the Kohanim have to eat it that day and that night. So min haTorah, they're permitted to eat the korban chatas or osham all night long, and it's only midirabbanan that they have to finish eating it by chatzos. The Mishnah, the first Mishnah in Brocha says, "Kedei laharchikas adam in avera." We're afraid if we'll permit people to eat the korban chatas or osham all night long, so they'll eat it after, they'll eat it, they'll continue eating after Alos HaShachar. Alos HaShachar is an hour and a half before sunrise, and it's very dark outside at Alos HaShachar. So if you eat the Korban Chatas after Alos HaShachar, that's an Aver Sheyesh B'Koris. That's you're eating Noisar. It says in Chumash, if you eat Noisar, it's an Isar Koris. So Kedei L'Harchi Kasadam and Aver, so they prohibited eating the Korban Chatas HaRosham after midnight to make sure no one comes anywhere near Alos HaShachar. So here the Tanoim had a dispute whether the din of Korban Pesach is the same as Chatas and Osham, that min haTorah can really eat Ochlos HaBasa B'Alayl HaZeh all night long, and it's only by the Rabbanan that you have to finish eating by Chatzos. So should we perhaps assume that this din of Chatzos is a din min haTorah? Where does it say in Chumash anything about Chatzos? Because it says Ochlos HaBasa B'Alayl HaZeh, should eat the Korban Pesach B'Alayl, and that expression B'Alayl HaZeh appears when HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives the Nevuah to Moshe Rabbeinu regarding Makas Bechoris. We have Arta Be'eretz Mitzrayim B'alayl HaZeh, the case is called Bechor Be'eretz Mitzrayim. So Makas Bechoris was at the moment of the split second of Chatzos. So one Tana is of the opinion that that's the Zman of Achilas Korban Pesach. You have to finish eating the Korban Pesach. B'alayl HaZeh has the same connotation as B'alayl HaZeh by Makas Bechoris. Yeah. How do we paskin Halacha L'maiseh, whether Chatzos is min haTorah or the Rabbanan? So that's two opinions in Tosfos. One opinion of Tosfos says we should pass on the Chatzos as min haTorah, because that's the way it says in the Mishnah and Zeh Mekoyma. You look in any Siddur before Baruch Shama, so it says, HaPesach Eino Nechal Elo Ad Chatzos. You have a double negative. Eino Nechal Elo Ad Chatzos. So the Gemara in Zvachim, in Perek, this Perek, Zeh Mekoyma, The Gemara comments on that expression, HaPesach Ein Anechel Elo Ad Chatzos, a double negative, sounds like it's saying a Din De'Araisa. Doesn't sound like it's a Harchok Amid De'Rabbonim. So Tosis has one opinion, if that's the way it says in the Mishnah, that's a Stam Mishnah, so we should Paskan like that Mishnah. Most of the Rishonim do not accept that opinion. Most of the Rishonim assume that Chatzos is only Amid De'Rabbonim, that's Rabbi Akiva's opinion, Chatzos is only Amid De'Rabbonim. But there's a minority of opinion in the Rishonim that the din of chatzos by korban pesach is menator. What's the difference halacha lemaisa whether chatzos is menator, chatzos is midrabbanan? So the Gemara says in the end of Pesachim, the difference is, what about the rest of the seder? If chatzos is a din menator, then it doesn't only apply to the korban pesach; it applies also to the matzah and to the morah and to the arba kosos. It applies to everything. So you have to finish the whole haggadah by chatzos. So you have to finish the end of the halal by chatzos. You can sing Echad Miyodeya after chatzos, but all the abakaisas you have to finish before chatzos. But if chatzos is only a din midrabbana, kedei laharchi kasadim and aveira, so the only time we'll have an aveira is regarding a korban chatos, korban pesach. If you leave the korban pesach too late in the night after alos hashachar, by mistake, you look outside, you'll see it's pitch black outside. It's really after alos hashachar, and you can't recognize that. So if the person will eat the korban pesach after Alos HaShachar, he'll be Chayv Kares. So the Lahachik Sadam and Aver, we say, don't eat the Korban Pesach after Chatzos. But what Aver can you violate already if you're going to eat the matzah too late? You'll be eating before Shachris. You'll be eating before Shachris. No. There's some people, Lubavitcher, they always eat before Shachris. The world doesn't come to an end. You'll be saying a bracha levatoli, say the bracha al achilas matzah, and it's after Alos HaShachar. So bracha levatoli is also only midirabon. The world won't come to an end over here. If you're talking about Korban Pesach, if you eat the Korban Pesach after Alos HaShachar, that's an Aveira Chamura. So that makes sense to make a Gzer Derabbanan. But if you're just talking about Matzah after Chatzos, there's no Aveira involved. So the Matzah after Alos HaShachar. So the Gemara says that's the issue, that's the Shaila. So in the Shulchan Aruch, they recommend that one should try to see to it that the Seder should proceed with such a speed that they should try to finish all the abakaisas by chatzos. And if not, then we paskin that you can finish even after chatzos. In the days of the Balei HaTosfos, many were insistent on eating what they call today matzahs mitzvah. The matzah had to be baked on Erev Pesach. There was an opinion of Rashi. Rashi's view is that if the matzah sounded just like the Korban Pesach, you have to shech the Korban Pesach on Erev Pesach in the afternoon. So the matzahs have to be baked on Erev Pesach. If the matzahs were baked before, like all the matzahs that we have, are all baked before Erev Pesach. So Rashi's opinion is that you're just not yotzei the mitzvah. The matzahs have to be baked on Erev Pesach in order to be yotzei the mitzvah by the Seder. So what do you do if Erev Pesach is Shabbos? You're not allowed to bake the matzahs on Shabbos. So that they would wait till Matzoi Shabbos, till the night of the Seder, and then they would bake the matzahs. Now how many matzahs can you bake already? You don't have too much time to bake. So they would, they write, the Jews didn't have their own ovens, so they used to rent the rights from the non-Jews to bake in their ovens. The non-Jews then, some of them were very religious Christians, so by them it's their Sabbath, Sunday. Leil, Matzoi Shabbos is Sunday by them. So not only did they not do any melacha, not only would they not bake in their ovens, they wouldn't rent out Amir al-Adachri. Amir al-Yehudi, they wouldn't rent out their ovens to the Jews either. Yeah, so there was always one Nachri who, if they bribed him enough, he would, if they wouldn't snitch to anybody else, they would let all the Jews bake in his oven. But they had to bake in shifts, because a lot of people had to bake matzahs. Some of them didn't get to bake the matzahs till after Chatzos. They started when Erev Pesach was on Shabbos, and everybody had to bake the matzahs in the middle of the night. So whoever got the third shift didn't begin his Seder until 2 o'clock in the morning. So there were Balei HaTosfos because of this Chumrah that they adopted. Today only Hasidim have that Chumrah, to insist on using matzahs to the Seder that were baked on Erev Pesach in the afternoon, and it's called Matzahs Mitzvah. They call it Matzahs Mitzvah. But in the days of the Balei HaTosfos, that was the widespread practice all over. The Shulchan Aruch quotes it. Everybody followed Rashi's Chumrah. Rashi is not in his commentary on the Gemara, the Rashi is in his Tshuvas. And the Rishonim quote the Rashi. So based on that Chumrah, so they all follow this Kula, that they wouldn't begin to say that till after Chatzos. Okay, so if you get stuck, so you have no brera. But L'chatchila, the proper practice is that one should avoid prolonging the Seder till after Chatzos, you should finish before. I know in my neighborhood there's always a competition when the children were little, so the children would always have a big competition who finished the Seder latest. So they finished at 2, they finished at 3, they finished at 4. My children would say, we finished before Chatzos. Everybody has a chumra, who finished latest? My children would brag that we finished before Chatzos. The main aspect of the Seder is missing today. We don't have a Beis HaMikdash, we don't have a Korban Pesach. So we eat the Afikoman at the end of the meal as a zecher to the Korban Pesach. Because in the days of the Beis HaMikdash, it says HaPesach was Nechal Al HaSova at the end of the meal. So to reminisce about the fact that we don't have a Korban Pesach, so we eat the Afikoman at the end. The Maharil is quoted, we have two Svarim, different Svarim by the Maharil. We have the Tshuvas of the Maharil, which he himself wrote. Then we have the Drushes Maharil. The Drushes Maharil is not Drushes, it's like a Luach. He starts with Nissen. He gives you the Minhagim and the Dinim of Rosh Chodesh, and he goes Nissen Iyar Sivan. He tells you which piyutim to say, which slichas, which kines, and so on. When you do say, when you don't say, when you say tachnum, when you don't say tachnum, he gives all the Dinim in the Minhagim for the whole year round. So that Sefer Maharil, the famous Sefer Maharil, was written by one of his Talmidim. So every so often there's a glaring error, and the commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch say the student was writing quickly and he made a mistake. So here, the Talmud of the Maharil writes that you should have two kizesim of Afikoman. The Maharil of Zok, you should lechatchila have two kizesim of Afikoman, because that's what they did in the days of the Beis HaMikdash. They had two kizesim of the Korban Pesach. So the commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch say, where in the world did he get that from? Where does it say that they had two kizesim? Well, you have to stuff yourself one kizai, says in the Mishnah. One kizai is enough. So they say, it must be a mistake. What he probably meant to write was that in the days of the Beis HaMikdash, on Sholosh Regolim, on Pesach Shavuot Sukkot, there was an obligation to bring Korban Chagiga on Pesach, on Shavuos, and on Sukkot. And on Pesach, that's a Din Min HaTorah, that's based on Sukkim and Chumash, and the Korban Chagiga is a Shlomim, Shalmi Chagiga. On Erev Pesach, in addition to the Korban Chagiga that you shecht on Pesach, the Shalmi Chagiga that you shecht on Pesach, you shecht it before Pesach, you're not Yotze. In addition to that chagiga that's required men HaTorah, there's a midirabbanon, they instituted chagigas harba osa. You should bring a shalmi chagiga on Erev Pesach in order to eat the chagiga before you eat the Korban Pesach. The Korban Pesach has to be a lamb or a goat that's within the first year. It's not like human beings that babies are born every day of the year. The animals, the season that the animals are born is usually Chodesh Nissan in the springtime. So they're very tiny. And you can't bring a Korban Pesach that's already more than 1 year old, because the Ovishnasa is puzzled. So the Korban Pesach is going to be a tiny little thing, like a little kitten, like a very tiny thing. We once took our children to, as an entertainment on Chalamite Pesach, we took them to a farm in New Jersey, and we saw the size of these animals when they're just born. They're very tiny. So the Gemara says there's hardly any flesh in a Korban Pesach. There's approximately 15 people can eat from one Korban Pesach. That's all. It's a very tiny thing. So the people are going to be starving. So the Chachamim introduced, in addition to the Korban Chagiga that you have to bring on Pesach, that's Min HaTorah, you should bring a Korban Chagiga on Erev Pesach, and you should eat that flesh first, so the Leil Pesach and the Seder, and the Korban Pesach, the flesh of the Korban Pesach should be eaten at the end of the meal, Nechal Al HaSova. Why? So the Yerushalmi explains why, because there's a special din that only applies to the Korban Pesach, Etzim L'Sish Bo. Poor people who don't have any meat, they hardly ever eat meat, so by the time they get a piece, they get a steak, so they're going to eat the whole steak and they're going to chew up the bones and eat all the marrow inside the bones and eat everything, because they hardly ever eat any flesh. Wealthy people will leave over. They're not going to chew the bones, they're not going to eat the marrow inside, they're going to leave over. So on Korban Pesach, there's a din, you're not allowed to leave over anything. But there's a din, you're not allowed to act kaptzonish, you're not allowed to break any bones or chew any bones. You can only eat the flesh that's on the outside of the bones. So we're afraid that people are hungry a whole day Erev Pesach, you don't eat anything, especially Tainas Bechorim. So the firstborn, until recently, they didn't realize that we can solve the problem by making a seam. Now every shul has the rabbi, that's part of the rabbi's his contract. He has to make a seam, has to learn something. He has to make a seam on Erev Pesach, so the Balabatim, who are firstborn, will be able to eat. Years ago, they didn't have such a system. Years ago, in the days of the Nadi Behuda, they would always arrange that there should be a bris on Erev Pesach. How can you always arrange there should be a bris on Erev Pesach? It's impossible. So whenever there would be a bris that was postponed, so they would always save that bris till Erev Pesach. So the Nadi Behuda says it's not right. He says you're not allowed to postpone it further. if you had to postpone it a day or two, so you have to do the bris at the first available opportunity. He says he doesn't think it's permissible to postpone an extra day, let alone a week or two. But that's that was a common practice in the days in Nedeb Yehuda. They would always have a bris on Erev Pesach. They didn't realize he could make a scene. So there were real communities where people were really fasting on Erev Pesach. People were starving. So Bizman Shebeis HaMikdash HaYikai, people are hungry. They're going to start eating the Korban Pesach. They're going to be so hungry, we're afraid that they may break one of the bones in their excitement and their eagerness to eat the flesh. So the Chachamim introduced the Chumra, you have to eat the Korban Pesach at the end of the meal. That's the dessert. And you should eat the chagiga. What flesh are you going to eat before? You should eat a chagiga sabasa. That's going to be already a big fat animal. A shlomim doesn't have to be less than a year old. So that can be a larger size animal. So the commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch say there must be a mistake when the student of the Maril was writing that you should eat two kezesim of Davi Kaiman. It doesn't make sense that you should eat two kezesim zecher lekorban Pesach that they ate two kezesim. It doesn't say anywhere. He says, no, it probably is two kezesim, one zecher lePesach, one zecher lechagiga, because they ate two different karbonis. And the Mishnah, in fact, speaks about the practice that we have. After the Churban Beis HaMikdash, you have to have shnei macholim, you have to have shnei tavshilut, you have to have two cooked pieces of food on the kairo that you don't have to eat. If you want to, you can eat it, but if you don't want to, you don't have to eat it. What are these shnei tavshilin all about? So first, the Gemara thought that the shnei tavshilin means that this is you have to have a minimum of two courses in the meal. That's like Erev Tisha B'Av by the Suda Mafsekis. You're not allowed to have shnei tavshilin. That's considered a fancy meal with two courses of two cooked machol. Then the Gemara comes to the conclusion: no, that's not what shnei tavshilin is all about. Shnei tavshilin was introduced after the destruction of Beis Hamikdash. We no longer have the opportunity to bring these two karbonis, the Chagiga Sarboasa, with the Korban Pesach. So we should have Shnei Tavshilin sitting on the Cairo. You don't have to eat them if you don't want to. Shnei Tavshilin is just to reminisce about the fact that we used to bring a Korban Chagiga and a Korban Pesach. So that's what the commentaries, the Taz and the Magen Avraham, they think that when the student of the Maharil wrote, you should eat two kezesim of the matzah of the Afikayman, it doesn't make sense that it's Zecher LePesach, they two kazesim. Where does it say that? No, it's Zecher LePesach and Zecher LeChagiga. That's the suggestion that they give. Years later, two centuries later, people started publishing the Rambam. For many generations, they didn't have any Rambam. So they opened up the Rambam. The Rambam says like that. You should eat two kazesim of Korban Pesach. The Farish and the Rambam. The Rambam reads the Mishnah, that B'diyevet, if you had one kazesim, you would say, and the Chatchili should have two kezesim. That's how the Rambam understood the din. We understand the din, ha-pesach nechal al ha-sova, eat the Korban Pesach at the end of the meal, in order to make sure you don't break any bones. So when the person is going to start the meal, he's hungry, so we're concerned he may violate Shvi'a Setzim in his eagerness to eat. The Rambam says that's a din by all karbonis. All karbonis are nechal al ha-sova at the end of the meal. You should eat all karbonis, not when you're starving. So the Rambam understands that, so what's the special din of Korban Pesach? So the Rambam says, no, Korban Pesach should eat kedei lizboa mimenu, you should eat two kezesim. The Chatchili should eat two kezesim, but to demonstrate that the Korban Pesach is more important than the matzah, more important than the mor. And but even if you had one kezais, you would be it. So that's what the recent Svarim write. Now that we have a Rambam, we see the Maharil was referring to the Rambam. There are a lot of things in the Maharil that for centuries were not understood, no one knew what the world is alluding to. Then the Chazanish and others point out, you look at the Rambam. The Maharil was just following the Rambam's opinion. This is one of the many cases. So we eat at the end of the meal on Pesach night. We're going to have Afikoyman. And if one is up to it, so you should try to eat the two kizesim of Afikoyman. Strictly speaking, if the person is not up to it, so you should just eat one kizais. A person has to be careful not to stuff himself on Pesach night. I used to learn b'charusa with a doctor who used to practice here in New York. So he said that the emergency wards on the two nights of Pesach have more Orthodox Jews than all year long. And they get sick because they eat too much matzah, because they drink wine and they get sick, or because they eat horseradish. They eat the mor and they get sick. So it's Zman Chereseinu. Pesach is supposed to be, we're celebrating the fact that we were freed from slavery. So we should be careful not to get sick. That's ridiculous, to get sick over fulfilling the mitzvahs. So if it's too much, a person shouldn't eat all this. So strictly speaking, one kazais of hafikayman is good enough. And if one is up to it, he should eat two kazais.
How much kazais?
Kazais is, I remember Rabbi Schwab used to be the rabbi in the community in Breuers, where I come from. So in Shulchan Aruch there are two opinions whether kazayis is a volume of half an egg or a third of an egg, average size egg. Rabbi Schwab for many years at the end of his life wasn't allowed to eat bread. So he said he didn't eat bread not on Shabbos, not on Yom Tov, on the week they didn't eat bread at all. He said on Pesach night he was only allowed to eat one kazayis. He didn't eat koirach and afikoyim, didn't eat all that. He just had one kazayis. So the first night of Pesach with the mitzvahs menatorah, so he had to be machmet to eat the volume of a half an egg. And the second night where the mitzvah matzah is only with the Rabbanon, the second day of Yom Tov is only with the Rabbanon, so he said he relied on the Magen Avraham. It says that it's the third of a matzah, slightly smaller size. You have to figure out exactly how much, how big. The children come home from school with these gigantic charts. That's something new in our generation. It was never so big. My father-in-law told me that he remembered eating Pesach night by Rav Shimon Shkop. He said five people ate from one matzah. I just feel better. I didn't ask him. Five people ate all the kazais from one matzah on the first kazais. But he said five people ate from one matzah. It's not the way they have the exaggerated shiurim today. How much matzah more than afikoyman? So in the beginning of the meal, when we say hamoitzi alechem and ratz, like on every Shabbos, every Yom Tov, whenever you start a meal, you say hamoitzi. Then you say asher kadoshana b'mitzvayse b'tzivano al achilas matzah. So the Shulchan Aruch writes that you have to eat two kezesim of matzah when you say hamoitzi matzah. Why? Because there are two distinct mitzvahs. There's one mitzvah every Shabbos and Yom Tov to eat a meal, so you need a kazayis and matzah for that. Then on Pesach night, there's an additional separate mitzvah, independent mitzvah, to eat a kazayis of matzah. So you can't kill two birds with one stone. That's called einos and mitzvahs chabilus. You have to have one kazayis of matzah for the mitzvah of matzah, and one kazayis of matzah for the mitzvah of Svidas Yom Tov.
What was that? Why can't they overlap?
So the Mishnah Brura, who usually quotes Chumras, has a whole attack against the Shulchan Aruch. He thinks that this is too much of a chumrah. So he says, most of the Rishonim say it's enough with one kazai, so he's not happy. Why? He says the mitzvah of matzah is identical with the mitzvah of Sudas Yom Tov. The mitzvah of Sudas Shabbos, Sudas Yom Tov, perhaps is usually midirabbanan, maybe menator, whatever, and tonight on Pesach night, the mitzvah of Sudas Yom Tov consists of eating a kazai sa matzah. So who said that the two different mitzvahs, that you have to have a kazai sa mitzvah, kazai for this mitzvah, kazai for that mitzvah, it's the same identical mitzvah. That's where the Mishnah Brura tainis, you should be mekel. Truth of the matter is that in the commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch, the Shulchan Aruch says, we all know that you have three matzahs, and then you break one matzah in half, and then by the time you say hamoitzi alachilas matzah, you have two and a half matzahs. So Tosfos and other Rishonim have two opinions about this. Do you start off with three matzahs and you break one in half and you're left with two and a half? Or do you start off with two and you break one in half and you're left with one and a half? What's the issue? Because on every Shabbos and every Yom Tov we want to have Lechem Mishnah Zecher L'mon, that the mon didn't fall down in the Midbar for 40 years when they had the mon to eat. So the mon didn't fall down neither on Shabbos nor on Yom Tov, so a double portion had to fall down on Erev Shabbos and Erev Yom Tov. So the Chachamim made a takana that whenever you say Hamoitzi on Shabbos and Yom Tov, you should have Lechem Mishnah Zecher L'mon. Then on the other hand, the Lechem Mishnah is supposed to be two shleimas. Okay, that's what we always insist on Shabbos. You have two shleimas. Then on the other hand, the Gemara has a comment on the pasuk: the mitzvah to eat matzah on Pesach night is described in the Chumash. We should eat lechem oni. What does it mean, lechem oni? Bread that a poor man would eat. I involve nun yud. Is that what it means, lechem oni? So the pashib shat lechem oni, bread of affliction. This is the lechem that we ate when we were slaves. But the Talmud has an additional level of interpretation that the bread should be like a poor man eats. What's unique about a poor man eating? So the Gemara has different suggestions, and we accept all of them. So one of the suggestions is that a poor man nebuch, he only has bread and water. He doesn't put in any flavoring in his bread. So we don't use matzah shira. We don't mix any flavoring into the matzah when we bake it. Matzah shira is not acceptable. Another suggestion the Gemara has is that the rich people can buy their bread from the bakery. They can have someone else bake the bread. The poor man nebuch has to bake the bread himself. He can't afford to go buy it in the store. So madarka shaloni, the poor man who masik the ishta wofa, he makes the fire in the oven and his wife bakes the bread all week long. So too on Pesach night, we should bake our own bread. That's why many people go down to bake the matzahs. All year long there's a concept of the mitzvah yosem b'shlucha. A person should always perform the mitzvah himself. Let's say, if I can put the mezuzahs up myself, if I can build the sukkah myself, so more correct is I should do it myself. If I can't do it, if I don't have enough time, so I'll have someone else put the mezuzahs up. Have someone else tie the tzitzis for me, and so on. If I know how to do it, I should write my own tefillin. If I don't know how to do it, so have someone else write the tefillin and the mezuzahs for me. So all year long there is such a concept, mitzvah bo yosem mishluchah, you should really do it yourself. And on Pesach night, by the Seder, there's an added feature that's an enhancement of the status of lechemoni. That's what it says in the Gemara. The Rosh has that comment. Because the Gemara says the poor man can't afford to go shopping, can't afford to buy the bread in the bakery. So he has to bake it himself. So Pesach night, we should eat matzahs that we participated in the baking ourselves. That's why many people like big rabbanim who would otherwise be busy learning paskin and shailas, so they like to go down and bake matzahs themselves because that's an enhancement of the lechemoni. So then the Gemara has another level of interpretation, another aspect of lechemoni, that the poor man a lot of times can't afford not to buy bread and not to bake bread. So he has to go knock on the doors and ask people to give him some leftover bread that they have. So what are they going to give the poor man? So the Pasuk in Yeshaya says, Halafrois l'roiv lachmecha. Yeshaya Novi encourages the wealthy people, break off a piece of bread and break bread and share a piece of bread with the poor man. So all year long, Madarka Shalani Biprusa, the poor man gets an edova from the wealthy people, they give him leftover, they give him shirayim, a slice of bread. So Pesach night, we should fulfill the mitzvah matzah on a broken piece of bread. We shouldn't have a shlema, we should have a prusa. So the question is, on the one hand, we want to have lechem mishneh, like every Shabbos and Yom Tov, two shlemas. On the other hand, you want to fulfill the mitzvah matzah with a prusa, with a broken matzah, to enhance the status of lechem oni. So how do the two blend in together? So the Shulchan Aruch says, the common practice is, like I said, Shulchan Aruch, you take three matzahs, you break one in half, so you have two shlemas and one broken. So the two shlemas, that's for the mitzvah of Suda, Shabbos, Suda, Yom Tov. And the broken one, that's for the mitzvah of matzah, assuming that these are two distinct mitzvahs. That's why the Shulchan Aruch says you got to have two kezaisim. One kezais from one of the two shlemas, and one kezais from the prusa, from the broken matzah, because you're fulfilling two separate mitzvahs. Other Rishonim disagree. They say, no, it's identical, it's the same mitzvah. On Pesach night, the Sudas Yom Tov should consist of, instead of having two shlemas, you should have one shlema and one broken matzah. And it's all the same mitzvah. So that's what they say, one kezais is enough. So it's really a little strange why the Mishnah Berurah all of a sudden wakes up and he says it should be enough, one kezais. Then he should disagree. He should say that you don't need three matzahs. He should have disagreed over there also. Those who Rishonim say that it's enough to eat one kezais because it's the same mitzvah, it's identical. The mitzvah is to have the Sudas Yom Tov over matzah, over a broken matzah. So they're the ones who say you shouldn't have two and a half. You have two and a half that's richer than the rich people. You have two shlemas, and then you have a prusa. So the Shulchan Aruch is writing l'shitasa. The Shulchan Aruch assumes, like those Rishonim, that they're two distinct mitzvahs. So one mitzvah is Sudas Yom Tov, you have two shlemas, and one mitzvah is matzah, you have a prusa. Since the two mitzvahs, you have to have two kezesim in the beginning and the middle. One kezais from the broken matzah, and one kezais from one of the shlemas. And the Mishnah Berurah wants to rely on the others. So there are many who only have two matzahs. They break one and a half, they're left with one and a half matzahs. That's what Rav Soloveitchik did. That's what Rav Moshe Feinstein did. They followed the other opinions. That's not the common practice. So when you start the meal, so the common practice is that everybody says, Hamoti al achilas matzah and yeet two kezais. If one is not up to it, so yeet one kezais. So you follow in the Mishnah Berurah, you eat one kezais. If one is mamish not up to it, like Rabbi Schwab said, that's all he ate. He only ate one kezais and that's all. He didn't eat any more, not for Korach and not for Afikayim. But if one is up to it, so we have first one or two kezaisim for Moti matzah, and then later on we have one kezais of matzah, one kezais of moror. So the Gemara says that matzah bizman hazeh, even though we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, we don't have a Korban Pesach, we live in America, still matzah is still min HaTorah. But moror is only midirabbanan bizman hazeh. The mitzvah to eat moror only exists min HaTorah in conjunction with eating Korban Pesach. Al matzah semrorim yochluhu, should eat the Korban Pesach in conjunction with moror. So the Gemara says that moror bizman hazeh is only midirabbanan. So the Gemara quotes Hillel. Hillel was a chief rabbi 100 years before the destruction of the Second Temple. And he had a dispute with the other rabbanim exactly how he's supposed to fulfill the mitzvahs of Pesach, Matzah, and Moror. So Hillel was of the opinion that you can eat everything all together. You can eat the Pesach, Matzah, and Moror all together. And the other rabbanim said, no, you have to eat each one separately. So Hillel's opinion that you can eat everything together, that's only because the Pesach, the Matzah, and the Mor, all three are mitzvahs min haTorah. The Gemara says that today we don't have any carbon Pesach, so the Mor is only by the Rabban, and the Matzah is min haTorah. So even Hillel would say, if you're going to eat Matzah and Mor together, you won't be out to the mitzvah of Matzah, because you're eating Mor, which on the level of the rice doesn't count as a mitzvah, it's considered a Dvar Hoshus. So if you eat something, let's say a guy's going to eat applesauce together with the matzah, so the holidays he won't be out to the mitzvah matzah. If you soak your matzah in water, because your teeth can't chew the hard matzah, so if you soak the matzah in water, that's not eating something else. You just soften the matzah. But if you're going to eat something else, you're going to eat applesauce together with the matzah. The Gemara says the applesauce kills the mitzvah matzah. You're going to have soup together with the matzah. So you're not yotzei. You're not yotzei the mitzvah matzah. So the Gemara says it's today someone will eat the matzah and the mara together. The mara is only with the rabbanon, so it's not a mitzvah on the level of the rice. So that'll kill the mitzvah of matzah. So today, even Hillel would agree, you have to eat the matzah separately, the mara separately. So then we eat matzah and mara together as a zecher lemigdash kehillel. Hillel bizman amigdash used to eat it together. If Hillel would be alive today, he wouldn't be allowed to eat it together. So we just make a zecher lemigdash kehillel. So in the Shulchan Aruch it says that the Haggadah was preceding, and people didn't have a chance to say who was in shul and who wasn't in shul and who went away. How can you, usually when you say Kiddush, everybody starts talking right away before you go wash hamotzi. How can people last so long without talking the latest news in the world, who's getting married, who's getting divorced, and who had a baby, and who's thinking of having a baby? So how can you not talk? So you got to hold yourself in till the middle of the meal. So how long do you have to, how long does a person have to hold himself in? So in Shulchan Aruch it says, from the time that you say Hamotzi lechem min ha'aretz al achilas matzah, you're not allowed to talk till after you eat the koirach. Because the koirach, we're eating matzah mara together to reminisce about the way Hillel used to eat the koirach in the days of the Beis Hamikdash. So when Hillel ate it, he said the brach al achilas matzah right before he ate the koirach. So it says in Shulchan Aruch that one shouldn't talk from the time you say the brach al achilas matzah till after you eat the koirach. The commentaries on the bottom of the page in the Shulchan Aruch point out that the Shaloh had a practice. This is impossible. The Shaloh had a practice. He wouldn't talk till after he ate the Afikoman. From the time that he said the bracha al achilas matzah till after he ate the Afikoman, he wouldn't talk. Why? Because other Rishonim are of the opinion that Afikoman is not zecher l'korban Pesach, but rather Afikoman is the ikar mitzvah matzah. But you start off the meal with matzahs, you have to say the brach al achilas matzah then. But really, you're only yotzei the mitzvah matzah when you eat the afikoman at the end of the meal. So since the brach al achilas matzah really relates to the afikoman, so the Shaloh HaKadosh had such a practice that he wouldn't talk till after eating of the afikoman. That's practically impossible. To go tell this to people, that's practically impossible. But this says in Shulchan Aruch that you should be careful not to talk from the time you say the bracha al achilas matzah until after you eat the korach. Lamaisa, everybody does talk. Everybody does talk because it's printed in the Haggadah that you say right before you eat the korach. So it says we all proclaim zecher l'migdash kilo kenasil bezman shabbes amigdash ayikayim. So everybody's talking. So what's going on? Why are they all talking? So the Mishnah Berurah thinks that that's a mistake. The Shulchan Aruch says that eating of the korach is a zecher l'migdash kilo, but you don't have to say it. So he thinks that originally this was printed in small letters. This is like instructions. You don't have to read the instructions. This is the instruction. This, the eating of the korach is a zecher l'migdash kehil. So that's why today you have a lot of the boys are learning the yeshivas and they learn Mishnah Berurah. So they'll have the practice that they'll recite zecher l'migdash kehil after they eat the korach. Instead of saying it before, the way it's printed in the Haggadah, they'll say it after they eat the korach, because the Mishnah Berurah made this big fuss that maybe reciting that line, proclaiming that line, this is Zechel Megdash Kil, and maybe this itself constitutes a hefsik, and the Shulchan Aruch recommended that one should not talk in between the reciting of the bracha al achilas matzah and the eating of the korach.
The time of the Gemara, when the Gemara talks about that, when they said karpas, they said it on the morrow. So that means that they didn't talk. Is the Haggadah hefsik?
No, what you got to say, that's not a hefsek. Okay, yeah. But to talk about outside things.
They wouldn't
things.
Talk about anything. They wouldn't talk, period, until after they...
Aren't you allowed to be matzah, but can I get you things like test tomorrow? Or, so okay. Isn't that exactly in the scale is also something that's not there?
You don't really need it. Let's say at a wedding. So at a wedding, the rabbi says the bracha over getting married. So then a lot of times the rabbi starts asking the chasm, is this your ring? Is it a shavar puta? Are the witnesses related to each other? Starts a whole discussion. Really, he should have the whole discussion before he says the bracha. If you already said hamotzi, and then you don't have any salt, or you already said the shema kol shofar, and the shofar doesn't work, he starts bala, it doesn't work, then you have to say, please bring another shofar. You got no choice. But if you can do all the talking before, some more correct is to avoid the talking. So zechel mikdash kehilo, if it can be avoided, so the Mishnah Berurah times, you should avoid it. He thinks it's...
That's why you have the
Seder
plate with everything ready in front of you.
Tosus has a whole discussion about karpas. What is karpas all about?
Why don't we use the Torah for Afikoman?
Why don't we have karach at the end of the meal also? That, according to those who say that the Ikra mitzvah matzah at the end of the meal, so they should really have karach at the end of the meal. Why do we have it at the beginning of the meal? So that's what leads the Rosh to believe that the Afikoman is not the main mitzvah of matzah. Afikoman is just a zechet to the Korban Pesach. That's his clinching proof. The Tosfos and the Rashbam were of the opinion that the eating of Afikoman is the ikar mitzvah of matzah, because in the days of the Beis HaMikdash they had the Korban Pesach at the end and they had the matzah at the end. We say al achilas matzah at the beginning because we're eating matzah, but we have in mind not to be eitzah with that matzah, we have in mind to be eitzah with the matzah at the end of the meal. So the Rosh argues that then you should have karech at the end of the meal. Why do you have at the beginning? So that's what he uses to clinch his argument that afikoman is really zechel korban pesach, has nothing to do with the mitzvah matzah. According to the others, is a problem. Why don't we have karech at the end of the meal? It's a very strong taina.
What did Hillel do?
Pardon me?
What did Hillel do?
He had at the end of the meal, for sure.
Didn't have matzah before that?
Probably did. Probably had matzah, you say hamotzi, and that it covers all the food in the meal. And then he had the korach at the end of the meal, the Pesach matzah mor all together at the end of the meal. Yeah. Tosfos has a famous disagreement with Rabbi Yosef Tuvelim. On Shabbos HaGadol, in many shuls, they recite a long piyut that was composed by one of the Rishonim, Rabbi Yosef Tuvelim, Bonfi Tuvelim. They translated the name into Hebrew. Piyut runs through all the laws of the Seder, all the laws of Bedikas Chametz, and all the laws of Pesach, and all the laws of the Seder. So in the Piyut, he explains that the reason why we have Karpas before we say Hamotzi, why do we all of a sudden, you say Kiddush, and then you're going to say Hamotzi, Kiddush Malkum Sudah. Why shouldn't you say Bar Pi Hadam on the vegetables before you're going to say Hamotzi? So he claims because the maror that you eat after the matzah, l'chatchila, you have to first eat matzah and then eat mor. You have to go in order. That's the way it says in Chumash. Amatzus umrorim yachlu, first matzah, then mor. But the evid, if you have mor before matzah, you would be yotzei, but l'chatchila, there's a seder. First matzah and then mor. So if you're going to have mor in the middle of the meal, so the Rabbi Yosef Tuvelim is of the opinion, that's not covered with hamotzi. That has nothing to do with the meal. Tosfos says, why not? We eat a lot of times vegetable salad in the middle of the meal. You don't say bar pi adama. If Yosef Tuvelim thinks that it's not covered with the Hamotzi, and you got to say Bar Pri Hadoma, and he said that's not proper to say two brachas over one kezais to say Bar Pri Hadoma, and a Sheker Rishon of the Mitzvah would say one Alachilas Mor over the Mor. That's not right. What exactly is not right? Places can't understand. What's right? We do it all the time. You say Kiddush, you say Bar Pri Hadoma, and then you say Kiddush. You say it by Matzah. You say Hamotzi Lechma, and you say a Sheker Rishon Mor Alachilas Mor. So Yosef Tuvelim says, no, you have to have two different kezaisim. One kezais for the matzah and one kezais for the hamotzi. Two different kezaisim. So he argues that over here, it's not proper. The mor that you're going to eat in the middle of the meal, Rabbi Yosef Tuvelim thinks is not going to be covered with the hamotzi that you recited in the beginning of the meal. So you're going to have to say Bar Pi Adama. And that's not proper to say Bar Pi Adama in the bracha al achilas mor of a one kezais. So that's why the rabbis had to institute karpas before the meal. You say Bar Pri Hadama before, and you have in mind that this Bar Pri Hadama should cover the maror in the middle of the meal.
So therefore a karpas has to be kezayis.
No, it doesn't have to be kezayis. No, it doesn't make a difference. Yes, kezayis, no kezayis. It doesn't make a difference. Others disagree. Tosfos disagrees with Rabbi Yosef. They quote this piyut. They said this piyut all the time. So they quote the piyut and they disagree. They think that it's not correct. They think the maror is in the middle of the meal. It's a vegetable salad. It's covered with hamotzi. What is karpas all about? Saying the Gemara says karpas is just to retain the attention of the children. You do something funny. You do a lot of things that are strange on Pesach night. So Tosis thinks that karpas has nothing to do with the Gemara, totally unrelated. And in fact, Tosis argues against Rav Yosef Tuvelum that it's such a long pause from the karpas till the Gemara. They think you should say bar nefoshes. If they say it can't cover it. If Mara would have needed a Hadama, they think it doesn't need a Hadama. It's covered with Hamaitzi. But if Mara would have needed a Hadama, so they think it wouldn't be covered with the Hadama that you said on the Karpas, because there's such a long pause in between.
Why don't Rabbi Yosef Tuvelum suggest the second Kzayas Mara? He says
we have the Karpas early on to wake to get the attention. The Gemara does say Karpas is to keep the attention of the children. So he thinks that's why you move the Karpas so early. He says you got to have Karpas before you have the Mar. You're going to have Karpas. It means to kizesim of a vegetable. But the Gemara explains why they moved it up all the way so early before the Manishtana. So he says that's to retain the interest of the children. But the solution of his was to have Tukazesim. A little bit of Karpas, and then a Kazais of the Mora later. So in the Shulchan Aruch, they recommend that we should be concerned about the both opinions. So they say that when you say Bar Pri Adam over the Karpas, everybody should have in mind that this is going to cover the Mora. Maybe Rabbi Yosef Tuvelum is right, that it's not covered with Tamaitz. But then they recommend that one should bedavka not eat a kazayis, because according to Tosfos' opinion, there's such a long hefsek, such a long pause in between the eating of the karpas and the eating of the maror. It's a hesach hadas, and you should really say bar nefoshes after you finish eating the karpas. So in order not to get a suffix, Rabbi Yosef Tuvelum says it's not a hefsek. Other rabbi, you have in mind that this hadama covers the maror in the middle of the meal. Because of this machlekes, the Shulchan Aruch recommends that one should be careful to eat dafka less than a kezayis for the karpas. What are you supposed to use for karpas? Obviously, you have to use something that's going to be bar pri hadama. So some have a practice, they use potatoes, other people have a practice, they use bananas, whatever. Rabbi Akiva Eger, on the bottom of the page, and the Shulchan Aruch quotes a passage from the Talmud Yerushalmi. Yerushalmi says that the word karpas means some kind of a green vegetable, and it says specifically petrezel. That's the vegetable that most people usually use. What do we usually use for karpas?
Parsley, right.
That's petrezel, it's parsley. So even though there are those who have complaints against the parsley, but that's what it says in the Talmud Yerushalmi. Yerushalmi is not on Mishnayis Pesachim, it's in a different place. It's in Mishnayis Shabbos. But Rabbi Kivege quotes it that's the reason why we use petrezel. Because the Rishonim says that the word karpas means a green vegetable.
Well, you brachas guy though says make shahakol on parsley.
Right, because it's normally not eaten raw. Yeah. So that's why there are complaints.
This one you're referring to?
Yeah, yeah. This is the long piyut, right? This is a long pita. Rabbi Yisrael goes through the whole seder, goes through all the dinim.
So what's the issue with making it an extra? Why can't you make a rub? You make a bori preitz in the middle of the sukkah sometimes. What is Rabbi Yisrael's problem with making a bori preadama?
He considers this to say two brachas over one kazayis. He considers a violation of einos and mitzvahs chavilas. So to solve the problem, you'll have to have two different vegetables. One vegetable to say bar pi adam, and then another piece of vegetable to say alachilas mar. So that's what we can do. So you could have really had both. Eat two kezaisim of mar in the middle of the meal. So the Gemara says, no, we moved the karpas up earlier in order to retain the interest of the children, that they should see something strange. But basically, he's just solving a problem by saying, you eat two kezaisim, eat a little bit more than one kezais.
Even without making the brain of fushes, isn't there such a long period of time between the time that you eat the karpas and the time you say the mar? Shouldn't that be a hefsek just because of the amount of time?
So that's what Tosis argues, it should be a hefsek. So Rabbi Yosef Tuvelum think, time-wise,
yeah.
Apparently he didn't have so many grandchildren with all the Rashi papers and all the gematrios. The Seder moved on at a normal pace. So right from here that the Seder is supposed to move on at a normal pace, not supposed to take forever. Exactly. That's a good proof.
There's a vegetable called Paschal celery. Maybe that's what Paschal is. It's called Paschal celery.
Special?
That's the name of it. That maybe Jews always take that.
Okay. It has to be some green vegetable. Okay.
Would Tosas have a problem if you were munching on celery during the entire Maggid?
No, if you keep on eating, then there's no problem. And strictly speaking, you're permitted to keep on munching, but you got to recite the Haggadah in between the munching. You've got to keep in mind to recite a little Haggadah also. Okay. The Mishnah describes that before you dip the karpas into the salt water, you have to wash until it's yadayim. What in the world is that all about? We know you wash until it's yadayim before you eat bread. We don't wash until it's yadayim before... Before we dip vegetables into water. So the Gemara gives a whole explanation that has to do with the laws, complicated laws of Tumah v'Tara. That Stam Yadayim, the hands, Stam Yadayim are considered Shnias, the Sheni l'Tumah. And the Sheni, if you touch water, so it makes the water into a Rishon l'Tumah, then the vegetable that you're dipping in will become a Sheni l'Tumah. And then when I my hands are Sheni, if I touch a vegetable, it does make it a Shlishi. A Shlishi is only if it's Tumah. But the vegetable is not trumah. So my hands are not going to make the vegetable tummy, but indirectly it will. If I dip my fingers into the water, so there's a chumra midirabanan, that the sheni makes the water into a rishon, then the water is going to make the vegetable I'm dipping into it, into a sheni. Then I'm going to eat the vegetable, going to make me tummy. So if I'm tummy, so what's the great tragedy? So we're all tummy anyway. Whoever went to a funeral is already tummy. We don't have any paraduma water, so everybody's tummy. So what's the even a kohen when a parent dies, when a close relative dies, kohen also goes to a funeral. So everybody's tummy. So what's the great tragedy? So bizman shebeis hamigdash hayakayim, it's a tragedy. You can't eat the korban pesach if you're tummy. So not only if you're tummy minatari, even if you're only tummy midirabanan. This din is a din midirabanan. My hands are shnia, it's going to make the water into rishon. The rishon is going to make the vegetable, it's going to make the carpus into a sheni. I'm going to eat the sheni, it's going to make me tummy. I won't be able to eat the korban pesach. But bizman hazeh, bizman shein beis hamikdashkayim, what's the problem? Shouldn't be any problem. So Tosfos Taka says there is no problem. The whole requirement, we have kadosh urchatz karpa. Everybody knows kadosh urchatz. Tosfos denies it. There is bizman hazeh, there is no urchatz. You don't have to wash until it's yadayim before you dip the karpas into salt water. We follow the Rambam's opinion. The Rambam insists that this was a takana that was instituted bizman shebeis hamikdash hayakayam, and the takana applies throughout all the generations, even though all of us are tummy anyway. And what's the big difference? Whether we're going to eat some food that's tummy, going to make us tummy again? We're all tummy anyway. So the Rambam insists we have such a takana. And the Rambam's opinion is that just like when you wash for bread, you have to say brocha. So the same is true whenever one eats any dovish tivula b'mashke. Let's say I have an apple that I just rinsed off and still have droplets of water on the apple, or I have grapes that are just rinsed off. I'm going to dip Danish into a cup of coffee. Whenever you eat any food that either I'm dipping it into a mashke now, or it was rinsed off and it's still moist. So according to the Rambam's opinion, you're obligated midrabbanan to wash until it's a diamond to recite a bracha in advance. So what kind of a compromise? What
all
do we do over here?
All foods, or even or just can do a karka?
No, also. Chicken also. Yeah, if you're dipping it into a liquid, or if it has liquid on it on the surface when you're eating it, if it was once rinsed off and now it's dry, so then it doesn't have the status of dovish tivula b'mashke. But if it's still moist now, I'm dipping it in, so you have to wash until it's done. So,
if you're a shlishi or you're a sheni, the parents or the fruit is a sheni, right? You're a dimer, you're showing your
dime. Makes me a sheni midirabbanan. If I eat food that's a sheni, it makes me a sheni midirabbanan. I'm not allowed to eat the korban pesach. But bizman hazeh, no one's eating any korban pesach. So Tosfos says you don't need the whole Netilas Yadayim Shadav Shetivula B'Mashke. It's only Bizman Shebeis Hamikdash Hayikayim. Bizman that people were eating Truma and Karbanis. Bizman that doesn't apply. And the Shulchan Aruch says on Pesach night you should wash and not say a bracha. You should wash to satisfy the Rambam's opinion that it's a Takana of the Rabbanah that applies even Bizman Hazeh. And you shouldn't say a bracha because according to Tosfos it'll be a bracha levatov. According to Tosfos the whole din doesn't apply Bizman Hazeh. So the Taz has his famous comment on this din. He says, "Man ishtana halayl hazeh mikol alel." How come all year long when we eat the fruits and vegetables that are moist, we don't wash until it's yadayim, and only on Pesach night we wash? So he says, "It's a raya. Everybody knows on Pesach night kadesh urchatz karpas." Everybody knows it's a raya that all year long is supposed to wash also without a bracha. That's the way it says in the big Shulchan Aruch. That's the way it says in Hilchos Netilas Yadayim. Not only do you have to wash Before you eat bread, you have to wash. Before you eat it, dovash tivul b'mashkin. So the Taz says that the people are not doing right. All year long when they eat the fruits or vegetables that are moist, they should wash all year long without a bracha, as it says on Pesach night. The Netziv, in his Haggadah, comes to defend the common minig. In fact, by many yekis, the minig is that only the father of the household washes before karpas. The rest of the members of the household don't wash. So he says, the washing on Pesach night before the karpas is part of the Zechel HaMikdash. In the days of the Beis HaMikdash, everybody would wash for Dovish and Tevula B'mashkin. So on Pesach night, we're acting as if we're making a Zechel HaBeis HaMikdash. So he says this is similar to the idea that the Vilna Goin claims that in Shulchan Aruch they have a minhag that the father of the household who is reciting the Haggadah wears the kippur. What is that all about? So the standard commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch say that on Pesach night you take out your most luxurious silverware. You have all the silver plates and the golden plates and everything, and you have such a beautiful meal all year long because of the Churban Beis HaMikdash. We really shouldn't use such fancy plates and silverware. We really shouldn't have, like by us, we always have a meal all year long. It's like a chasana. We have 10 different courses in a meal. A kugel and a cholent and a vegetable salad and this and that, you know, so many different things. And the Gemara says it's not right. All year long you shouldn't do that. Only Pesach night. Pesach night is man chayresein. So we're afraid, that's how the commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch say, we're afraid that this is going to go to the guy's head. Such riches and such elaborate meals, he's going to sin. So we should wear a kittel. Haskalo yom amisa. The kittel, we bury people in a kittel. So we should remember that we're all going to die someday and we shouldn't sin. This is going to prevent us from sin. So that's why in the Shulchan Aruch it says that the minig is that if a person is an avelus, if avelus for a relative, so it's only till the end of Shloshim, avelus for a parent, till the end of the Yud Beis Chodesh, till the end of the 12 months of avelus, so he doesn't have to wear a kittel. You don't wear a kittel in such a case. That's the common minig. So the Vilna Gaon didn't like that. What do you mean? On Pesach night, Yaskalo Yom Amisa, wearing a kittel because to remember avelus, he didn't think that that made any sense. He said, no. The kittel, he has a gemara, the kittel, when the people came to the Kohanim of the Beis HaMikdash, when they do the Hakrovos HaKohanim, have to wear special uniforms. One who's not a Kohen, is not doing Avodah Beis HaMikdash, doesn't have to wear a special uniform. So I mean, I come to Yerushalayim in my regular Shabbos Dikas suit, and I eat the Korban Pesach by the Seder in the regular suit. So the Vilna Gaon says, Selek Sach Nishtaf and Sech. It can't be. So he has a gemara where the gemara says, what kind of a outfit did Moshe Rabbeinu wear the first 7 days, the last 7 days in Chodesh Ador when they built the Mishkan? We just read by Yaakov Pikud, he said Moshe Rabbeinu did the Hakrovos HaKarbonos. Starting from Rosh Chodesh Nissan, Aaron did the Hakrovos HaKarbonos. So the Gemara wants to know what kind of a uniform, what kind of an outfit did Moshe Rabbeinu wear? He didn't wear Big Dekuna. Big Dekuna says it's only for Aaron Abonov. So you mean he wore his regular suit? A Shabbos Dik, a suit, that's all. So the Gemara says, no, it can't be. He must have worn some chaluk lava. He must have worn a special white garment. So the Vilna Gaon says, you see from the Gemara that when you're doing an asik in karbanis and you have to wear some special outfit, so you don't just wear your Shabbos Dikah uniform, you can't wear big dekunas, so you wear a special chaluk lava. So he's guessing, the Vilna Gaon is guessing, when they came to eat the Korban Pesach in Yerushalayim every year on Yom Tov, whenever they ate any karbanis, they probably would put on a chaluk lavan, a special white kittel for the occasion. So the Vilna Gaon is of the opinion that the reason why we wear a kittel for the Seder is not because Yaskelo Yom Amisa, and even if one is in Avelus, he should still wear the chaluk lavan. The chaluk lavan is a zechel amigdosh that when they ate Korban Pesach, they had like that. So that's what the Netziv was the Rosh Yeshiva in Balozhin. Balozhin was founded by Rav Chaim Balozhin at the Talmud of the Vilna Gaon. So he always follows the opinions of the Vilna Gaon. So he says, he thinks that just like the kittel of Zechel HaMikdash, so to the washing the Tilis Yadayim on Pesach night for the Karpas is also a Zechel HaMikdash. In Yiddish folklore, they tell about the Yeshuvenik who washed before Karpas. And he says, Baruch Atah Hashem Mehera Malach HaOlam Asher Kedeshanu B'Mitzvos HaTzivanu. So they asked him, what is that all about? So he said, it says in the Haggadah, you wash and you don't say, Alan Tilis Yadayim. So every year I say it over in the yeshiva. The students should know that it doesn't mean you just don't say the last three words. You don't say the whole bracha. One washes, because it's a machlekes, the Rambam and Tosfos. According to the Rambam, you do say the whole bracha from the beginning to the end. According to Tosfos, you don't say the bracha at all, you don't wash at all. So we follow this compromise. We wash until it's done, but we don't say the whole bracha. But it's not just we don't say the last three words. Yeah. What is the haroises all about? So the Mishnah says you dip the maror into the haroises, and then you have to shake off the haroises. People make a mistake. They pile on a ton of haroises, and then they eat the maror with the haroises. Shulchan Aruch says that you're not yotze the maror. If you have any extraneous things, like if you eat matzah with applesauce, so you're not yotze. If you eat matzah together with soup, so you're not yotze the matzah. So if you pile on haroises onto the maror, you're not yotze. So you have to dip the maror into the haroises, then shake it all off. What is the haroises all about? So the Gemara has to Mar has a machlokes satanoim. So the Chachamim are of the opinion, the majority opinion was that it's for health reasons, that the maror may possibly have worms in it. There are kosher worms, there are non-kosher worms. So it may have kosher worms in it, but the kosher worms, if they're alive, are not healthy. You've got to have worms crawling around in your stomach, live worms, not healthy. So you dip the maror into the haroises, that this will succeed in killing the worms. You're allowed to kill worms, apparently. Now, if Yantar falls on our shop, there's also a lot of kill worms. So that's one opinion in the Gemara. You're talking about kosher worms, but it's unhealthy to eat live worms. You've got to dip the maror into the haroises to kill the worms. It's purely for health purposes. And if you have removed the worms otherwise, then there's no need to have any haroises. The other Tana, the minority opinion, Mishnah is Reb Lezer, Reb Tzadik. He's of the opinion that haroises is a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah midirabbanan. What kind of a mitzvah midirabbanan is it? So the Talmud has three different explanations. So one explanation is it's supposed to be zecher letit. It's supposed to remind us of the cement that the Jewish people were using to make all of those pyramids and to make all of those ori miskenos lefaro as pisam es ramses. Other opinion in the Talmud is that it's supposed to be zecher letapuach, that the husbands were enslaved in Egypt and they weren't interested in having any children. They were just working so hard they wanted to give up living. And the wives used to make love to the husbands, tachas atapoch or aticho. So we, and that's how b'schus nashim tzidkanis nikol avasein mitzvah. The women encouraged the husbands they shouldn't give up hope and they should continue having children. And someday we'll see the light. Someday we'll get out of Egypt. So we want to reminisce about the tapuach, so we have charoises made from tapuach. Then the third opinion that appears in the Talmud Yerushalmi is that the charoises is a mitzvah midrabbanan zecher ledam. So much Jewish blood was spilled, so we should pour red wine into the charoises, either red wine or something red, to give it a reddish color that it should look like blood. So the Shulchan Aruch says, first you should have the charoises should be thick, that it should be reminiscent of cement, and then you should pour the red wine, unless you live in a country where there's Alila Saddam. There are always blood libels in all parts of the world, even in recent years. So if you live in a location where there's a blood libel, so you won't have the Zecher Ledam. You'll only have the Zecher Letapuach and the Zecher Letit. And if you live in a country where there's no Alila Saddam, so you should have all three. So you should start off with thick charoises, and you should pour in the red liquid before you dip in the maror. What exactly is a tapuach? So people today usually assume that tapuach means apples. And modern Hebrew tapuach is apple. Tysis points out that tapuach in biblical Hebrew means a citrus fruit, an esrog. And the Gemara is explicit like that. The Gemara says because we want the maror to be zecher to the cement that the Jewish people used to build all of these pyramids and so on, we want it to be zecher to tapuach. So the Gemara says, Tzorech l'simuche, the charoses should be thick, and Tzorech l'kehuye should have a sharp acidic flavor to it like a tapuach. So apples don't have any acidic flavor, citrus fruits have acidic flavor. So it's clear from the Gemara that the main ingredient in the charoses should really not be the apple, the main ingredient should be oranges or something, oranges or lemons or something else. What else do you put in? So Tosfos quotes from the Gaonim, and the Shulchan Aruch quotes this, we mix in all kinds of fruits that the Jewish people are compared to in the book of Shir HaShirim. So we mix in figs and dates and nuts and all kinds of things. That's the charoises package that you're probably going to get in the mail from Telza Yeshiva or something. That awful tasting sticky thing, that's what it's supposed to be. That's the real ingredients that the charoises is supposed to be. The apples, that's a modern misunderstanding, that people think that the word tapuach means an apple. I remember Rav Soloveitchik was once talking about the fact that the Christians always made paintings of the original sin They have a painting of Adam and Eve is giving the apple to Adam to eat. So the Gemara doesn't have, the Gemara has different suggestions exactly what was the chetah, what kind of a fruit was it. Nobody says that it was an apple. So where did this mistake come from? Rabbi Soloveitchik said, because the Gemara has a popular view that the original sin was an esrog tree. So an esrog in biblical Hebrew is known as a tapuach. And in modern Hebrew, a tapuach means an apple. So the Christians who painted the pictures made a mistake. They were confusing one tapuach with the other tapuach. The Mishnah quotes that already Bisman she Beis Hamikdash Hayekaim, the Beis Shammai and the Beis Hillel lived in the days of the Beis Hamikdash. Shammai and Hillel were the chief rabbi and assistant chief rabbi 100 years before the destruction of Beis Hamikdash, and there were Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel for 100 years before the destruction of Beis Sheni. So already in the days of the Beis Hamikdash, the practice would be to recite Hallel in conjunction with the eating of the Korban Pesach. They would break up the Hallel in two parts. One part would be before the meal, the other part of the challah would be after the meal. That's what the Mishnah means, that the Korban Pesach is nechal in conjunction with challah. It doesn't mean that you say challah while you're eating the Korban Pesach. The Gemara says you're not allowed to talk when you eat anything. It means you have a little challah before, little challah after. And then the Gemara says that the first half of the challah that's recited before the meal, and the second half of the challah that's recited after the meal, each half of challah should be concluded with a bracha. So the first half of the challah that's recited before the meal, we conclude with the bracha, Asher Gi'olon V'Golas Avosenu Mitzrayim. We say Ohol Nusach, and then we say Baruch Atah Hashem Goal Yisroel. That's the second cup of wine. And then the fourth cup of wine is, the third cup of wine is the Bichas HaMazon. The fourth cup of wine, the Mishnah says that we recite Bichas HaShir. At the conclusion of the Hal, we recite Bichas HaShir. What exactly is Bichas HaShir? So the Gemara has two opinions. Apparently there were two different practices, and the Gemara says, recommends, we should follow both of the practices. We combine both together. Which are the two? So one opinion is that all year long when you say Hallel, you conclude the Hallel with Yehallelucha, the small paragraph that's printed in the Siddur. So what's the Chiddush on Pesach night? So the Gemara says, no, all year long the reciting of Yehallelucha, the concluding paragraph, is optional. The Mishnah says, Makom Shenagel Levarach Mevarachim, Makom Shenagel Shelo Levarachim Mevarachim. And on Pesach night, it's obligatory. You have to conclude with Yehallelucha. So that's one suggestion in the Gemara. Then the Gemara has the other suggestion, no, that not Yehallelucha, we should say Nishmas Kol Chai, and we should conclude with Yishtabach. And that's the Birchas Hashir. So the Gemara comes to the conclusion, we should say both. So how exactly do you say both? So some of the Haggadahs that you most certainly got in the mail from some disc and orphanage home or whatever, from some other organization, so they reprint the old Haggadahs. Some of the old Haggadahs have an opinion that nobody follows today. That at the conclusion of the Hallel, you say Yehallelucha, and then you say Baruch Atah Hashem Melech Meholal Batish Bachos. Then you say Hoda Lashem Kitav Kili Olam Chaz. Then you say All the Kili Olam Chaz. Then you say Nishmas Kol Chai. You say Yishtabach. You say the bracha at the end of Yishtabach. You say two brachas. Say two brachas over the fourth cup of wine. That's what the Rashbam says on the Gemara. But nobody follows today. Nobody follows that Rashbam. You have to be careful. You can't just use any Haggadah that you got in the mail. These were all legitimate Haggadahs. Maybe there were opinions, there were years ago, there were people who followed these opinions, but today nobody follows that opinion of the Rashbam to say two brachas over the fourth cup of wine. So lemaisa now, there are two practices you have in the Shulchan Aruch. You have Nusach Ashkenaz and Nusach Svart. So it says in the Shulchan Aruch that each family should make up their mind whether they're going to say the Haggadah, Nusach Ashkenaz and Nusach Svart. Nusach Ashkenaz more or less goes in order. At the conclusion of the second half of Hallel, so you start saying Yehallelucha, and then you say up until not including the last line, and you leave out Melech Meholal Batish Bachos. You don't say the Hasima. And then you say the 26 Kili Olam Chazdos, then you say Nishmas Kol Chai, and you conclude with Yishtabach. Everything goes in order. At the end of the Hallel, you say Yehallelucha, but you're going to be Chosim with the Yishtabach at the end. So you say Nishmas Kol Chai, and then you conclude with the Yishtabach. And the Nusach Svard sort of goes backwards and forwards. Nusach Svard, you finish Hallel, and you don't say Yehallelucha. Then you say the 26 Kili Olam Chazdos, then you say Nishmas Kol Chai Yishtabach, up until and not including the last line in Yishtabach. And then you go back and you say Yehallelucha, and you conclude with Yehallelucha. So each family, the commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch said, the Chaganka quotes from the others, from the earlier postman, each family should make up their mind. Are they Svardim, or are they Hasidim? So they want to daven Nusach Svard. Everyone should say the Nusach Svart, conclude with the Yehallelucha. And if it's Nusach Ashkenaz, So they should say accordingly. They should say the Nusach Ashkenaz. Many of the people have Haggadahs with Chassidish Rebbe's commentaries on it. So the Chassidish Rebbe's usually will have for the text of the Haggadah, they're going to have a Nusach Svard Haggadah. So you have to make up your mind whether you're davening Nusach Svard or you're davening Nusach Ashkenaz. The Mishnah says that for matzah, to fulfill the mitzvah of matzah, the flour has to be from one of the five kinds of grain. And the Mishnah lists off chit of sorim and so on, the different kinds of grain. There is an issue that was brought up in recent years regarding oats. The Mishnah, the Gemara explains that how did the rabbis determine that only these five kinds of grain count and the other kinds don't count? So the Gemara says because the when you mix flour with water, so a chemical reaction will occur. So sometimes that reaction is labeled as chimutz, and sometimes that reaction is labeled as sirchon. So how do you know whether it's chimutz or sirchon? So the recent scientists say that it depends on how much gluten it has in it. So if it has gluten in it, then it's going to be chimutz. If it doesn't have gluten, it's going to be sirchon. So that's the question. There are people who are allergic to gluten, and they can get severely sick. They can become incapacitated. They can die. Some people can die from the allergy. So they make special matzahs for them from British oats. Israeli oats or American oats have such a high percentage of gluten that they're going to get sick from those too. But if they use the British oats, it has much less, hardly any gluten, so they won't get sick from that. So that's taka shayla. Some say that the British oats, because they don't have enough gluten, so it's not from the chameshes mini doga. So they showed it to Rabbi Yashiv, and they mixed together the oats. They took oat flour and they mixed it with water. Rabbi Yashiv said, that's enough, that is called chimutz. Yeah, they showed them Israeli oats. They didn't show them British oats. They don't make the matzahs from Israeli oats. They make it from the British oats. So that's a question. It could well be that the British oats are not really from the mini doga. So one who doesn't have this allergy really shouldn't eat these matzahs. It says the minig is, they quote from the Maharil, the minig always was, for whatever reason, they give different reasons, that we're mahara davke to use chitim. For various reasons, they give the issues davke chitim. So if one has such an allergy, you have no choice, so you can be mekel to use the other oats. Now, in recent years, many Ashkenazim are interested in buying Sfardashe matzahs. The Ashkenazi matzahs are very brittle, and you have to chew hard in order to, it crumbles in your teeth. The Sfardashe matzahs are like cake. They're very soft, they can bend. So the question is whether this is a violation of the minig Ashkenaz. I didn't think so. I didn't think. The Ramah says the minig is that we use small matzahs as opposed to large, but the Ramah didn't mean, I don't think the Ramah meant that it has to be the consistency that the Ashkenazim have. I don't see that it's a violation of the minig if one prefers to use the Sfardish matzahs. I didn't think that there's any problem over there. What kind of vegetable are you supposed to use for maror? So again, the Mishnah lists off five particular vegetables. And then the Shulchan Aruch quotes from the Talmud Yerushalmi, the more correct is once you use the first one, it's preferable. If you can't get used the first one, you should use the second one. If you can't get the second one, you should use the third one, and so on, in descending order of importance. So the first one that's listed is the Rishonim all say, it's lettuce. In the days of the Talmud, they didn't have regular lettuce in Eretz Yisrael, so they only had romaine lettuce. So romaine lettuce is exactly what the Mishnah is listing off, romaine lettuce. So many Rabbanim were of the opinion that the regular iceberg lettuce is not that different from romaine lettuce. Rabban Kotler was of the opinion like that, that if he can use, if romaine lettuce is good, so regular lettuce is also good. Rabbi Soloveitchik always used to recommend you should use romaine lettuce. He wasn't prepared to assume that it's exactly the same. What are the other vegetables that are mentioned? So we're not sure. So the minig developed a few centuries ago. It wasn't an older minig. Minig developed in the 1400s or so that they started using horseradish. Well, horseradish is really a big question. The people who started to use it claim that that's the third vegetable that's mentioned in the Mishnah. The Mishnah talks, tamcha is the third one mentioned. So the Mogan Avraham says that that's horseradish. It's very questionable because the Gemara says that all of the five vegetables are leafy vegetables. Horseradish is not at all a leafy vegetable. It's a root. It says Shulchan Aruch, you're not yet if you eat the root. And they say, no, but the horseradish root is different.
But it does have leaves on top.
Right. So some Amahada Davka to eat the leaves on top as opposed to eating the horseradish, the root itself. Others insist on eating the horseradish, the root itself. So some insist that you're only yotze if you eat the root intact. If you grind it up, you're not yotze. Others say you're only yotze if you ground it up. If you eat it intact, you're not yotze, because it's not normal. So opposite opinions. The whole practice of eating horseradish is very, very questionable. One of the boys from the yeshiva published an essay years ago. There used to be a journal in yeshiva that was called Gesher, to bridge scientific knowledge with Torah. That was the purpose of the essay, of the journal. I don't think they haven't printed in many years. Gesher. So the student published an essay at that time in English where he explained that it's really questionable whether you use anything if you use horseradish. And about 15 years ago, this fellow now lives in Eretz Yisrael. He's a professor in Ben-Gurion University and teaches botany. Now he had his essay translated into Hebrew. So many people in Bnei Brak and Meir Sharm stopped using horseradish because it's a very convincing essay.
Horseradish is not bitter. It's sharp. But it's not bitter. You know, right. An onion is sharp also. You wouldn't use an onion.
Right. That was his argument. Right. The Pashta says that it's not that you're not getting anything with it. So that's problematic. Some have the tradition, the Magen Avraham quotes this from the Rishonim, that the second vegetable that's mentioned in the Mishnah is endives. So some use endives, different practices. For the mitzvah of matzah, the Gemara says that the matzah has to be baked lishmo. So the matzah baked lishmo means that it has to be a maisa hodam, it has to be a Jewish person baking the matzah. The commentaries on the Gemara point out if women would have been exempt from the mitzvah matzah, the tradition always was that the women baked the matzahs, like the women baked the challahs for Shabbos and for Yontif. The women baked the matzahs. So if the din would have been that women are exempt from the mitzvah matzah, they wouldn't be able to bake the matzah lishma, because whoever is not mechuyev in the mitzvah can't create lishma. If you have a child before bar mitzvah, he can't do the baking of the matzah. If you have a non-Jew, is not mechuyev. So the mazel is that the women are mechuyev in matzah, despite the fact that it's a mitzvah saseh shazman gromo. This is an exception to the rule. The women are mechuyev in all the mitzvahs on Pesach night. They have to eat maror, they have to drink abrikosis, they have to have haseba, they have to... Shulchan Aruch explains why the women don't practice haseba, but officially the women are mechuyev in haseba, the same as the men. So that we assume the women are just as mechuyev as the men are in the mitzvah of matzah, so that's why they can bake and make it lishma. The question was brought up, what if you have machine matzah? Is that considered asiya lishma? So one of the big rabbanim in Europe, the Kovner Rav, published an essay. He died in the middle of the war in Kovner. So he, before they had a chance to kill him, so he died from disease. So he has an essay where he discusses what's the status of using a use of machines. Is that called Maisa Ha'odam or not? So he thinks that if the Gemara distinguishes between Kerach Rishon and Kerach Sheni. So he interprets the Gemara as follows. He says, if you would push a button, how much would be accomplished if you would turn off the machine after a half a minute? So whatever would be accomplished in the first half a minute, that's called Kerach Rishon, and that relates to you. It's considered as if you did it. And whatever happens because the machine was not turned off, that's called Kerach Sheni, and that's considered as if it happened by itself. If you push a machine that bakes matzahs and then you turn it off in half a minute, you'll get nothing. None of the matzahs will be baked. So according to him, none of the machine matzahs are acceptable. All of the poskim disagreed with him. The Chazanish and the Kozhuglov and many Chassidish and Misnagdish, they all disagreed. They said, based on the Magen Avraham and Hilchos and Tilos Yadayim, that it's not correct, that if you set up a whole system and you push a button, the whole thing relates back to me. It is my activity. It's considered my mice. So that's why there are many who are insistent that it's preferable to have a machine shmura, because the machine matzahs take much less time than the hand matzahs. Hand matzahs take five times as much time. The machine shmura is much faster. Is it necessary? The Gemara says that you have to have the matzahs have to be watched. It has to be shmura, not only asiyah l'shmura, has to be watched and guarded that it didn't turn into chometz. So from what time on do you have to watch it? So the Gemara has a dispute. Does the grain have to be guarded from the time it was detached from the ground, Mishas Ketzira, or is it sufficient if it was watched from the time that you mixed it with the water, Mishas Lisha? So there are two opinions in the Shulchan Aruch. So l'chatchila we're machmer that you should use Davke Shmura Mishas Ketzira. And if you don't have, so we pass Kamikar Adin, that regular matzah, all the matzah that they bake is all Shmura Mishas Lisha. And they instituted in America, Rabbi Lazer Silver, before him, when they first started the matzah factories here, they bake all the. They insist that Jews should push the button all the time, and all the regular matzahs are baked lishma. because they know that the overwhelming majority of the Jews in America are going to use regular matzah. They're not going to use shmura matzah. So b'shas hadchak, that's considered shmura matzah. That's shmura mishas lisha, even though it's not shmura mishas ketzira. More correct is to be machma for shmura mishas ketzira, but it's much more expensive. On Pesach night, we celebrate. Not only are we celebrating in the past that the Yetzias Mitzrayim, we are celebrating in anticipation of the Gula Ha'asida. We recite in Shema Skalchai, Tevorach HaShimcha, we are praying that they will come, that all of mankind will be praising HaKadosh Baruch Hu over the Gula Ha'asida. Why is this one of the themes that's brought out on Pesach night? Because when HaKadosh Baruch Hu revealed himself to Moshe Rabbeinu, before Yetzias Mitzrayim, he told him that now he's only making a temporary geula for the Jewish people, but he told them, and the Jewish people, if the Jewish people ask me, what is your name, what should I tell them? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells him, Eke Asher Eke, what does it mean? So Rashi quotes from the Medrash, I will be with the Jewish people in this geulas, and I will be with them in the future to lead to the geula Hasida as well. So it was told to Moshe Rabbeinu before Yetzias Mitzrayim that there will be a geula Hasida. So we are celebrating in anticipation of that Gula Hasida. But that Gula Hasida is going to be in the Shmas Kalheim, and all of mankind will recognize our Kodesh Baruch Hu. What are we going to do? There's so many nations in the world, there's always going to be some nation who doesn't want to be Mekab Olam Malchus Shemaim. So we pray to our Kodesh Baruch Hu, Shfar Hamas Chalagam HaShelo Yedoucha. That's not fair. That because of some Russian Marusha in some country, he should be Makab the Gula Hasida. So we pray to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Shvar Hamas Chalagayim, bump them off, get rid of those troublemakers, and then we'll be able to celebrate. When all of mankind will recognize Malchus HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then we'll be able to celebrate in Shmas Kol Chai. No? That's what we hope for, that's what we pray for. Yerotzen, we should be zoicha to see that Gula Hasidah. Good night to everybody.
What's Hamasa? It's calm, the sunlight.